The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. Music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. This is part of our series doing Fringe Preview podcasts, and that's for the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival held from September 9th to 20th in scenic downtown Rochester, New York. Go to rochesterfringe.com to find out all the events. Make sure to get the app as well so you can get information on the fly when you're out and about. And I have a guest here. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Matt Rogers, and I'm doing the Sights and Sounds District for the Fringe Festival this year. I am owner and fellow explorer of a company called The Lost Burrow.
So your show is what day?
It is four showings. It's Friday, Saturday, the first weekend, and Friday, Saturday, the second weekend. It's a half-hour listening experience. It's going to be about 5 o'clock each day.
Nice. Is that a ticketed event that people can get on the website as well?
Yes. Yep. It's a ticketed event. It's going to be at a new venue. It's Austin Stewart Plaza. For those of you who might not recognize that name, it used to be called Charles Carroll Plaza, right there on the Genesee River.
Oh, yeah. So one, tell me a little bit about what this event is, and then we're going to get into all of your history.
Sure. It is a listening experience. You will get your ticket. You'll come to the booth at the plaza, and I will check you in, and then I will give you a pair of headphones. And at the start of the show, you are going to listen to a pre-recorded story that I wrote and performed, and it's going to talk about all of the insane and crazy history that happened right at the spot where you are. It's going to be everything from the very beginnings of that area almost to the present day.
Yeah, and that's so this is the second time you've done this kind of event. I wouldn't say it's exactly the same, but that's the style of event at Fringe, right?
Yeah, similar format. Last year and the year before, I had incredible luck and was very well received. I did a similar listening experience called The Unluckiest Corner. That was right at Parcel 5. Very similar format, talked about all the incredible and insane things that happened there from the very beginnings that, you know, East Avenue was a Seneca Nation footpath all the way to there being Rochester's first murder to the rise and fall of Sibley's in Midtown Plaza and into the present day.
Yeah, we were just talking about Sibley and one of the other recordings I did as a preview. Somebody was telling me about how it was going there, you know, when it was hopping in the, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and how it was just this vibrant thing, you know, Sibley downtown, and that, you know, that the events they're doing at their Focus Theater in that building and seeing that progress. It has to be really interesting to go back and listen to all these stories from Rochester during either Boomtown or prior to that, and listen to what Rochester, you know, learn about what Rochester was and the things that happened during that time.
Oh, definitely. It was back in a time when, you know, going downtown was a prestigious thing to do. And, you know, when you don't really have it anymore, but that was in the time of when you had specific employees that were tasked with designing the window displays for people to come down specifically to enjoy and be amazed by. I mean, now you only see that in Chicago, LA, and New York City. But yeah, Sibley's was at one point the largest department store between Chicago and New York. And it was massive, absolutely massive. And it was right across the street from B. Foreman and McCurdy's at Midtown, which were equally well-known and prestigious department stores.
See, that's completely fascinating. You know, it's the stuff that, like, you know, people of our age, like, we remember, you know, like, you'd watch, like, you know, Home Alone 2, right? Or you watch, like, Christmas Story, mm-hmm. right? And you see those, like, those, what we would refer to now as these antique-y displays, but they had all these things that were just for wonder. They were just for delight. And yes, obviously to sell, but some of the stuff they weren't selling, it was just to delight the customers, to entice them. Mm-hmm. And it was a self-destination. And you look at those, you know, you look at those massive, you know, toy stores or the massive department stores in the big cities. Mm-hmm. It's a different, it is a time, it is lost to time, in, except for these very rare exceptions now. And even then, it's kind of lost.
Yeah, it's that, like, it's that FAO Schwartz kind of idea. I mean, I, as kind of like a hobby, because I need more hobbies, yeah. I am a big theme park geek. And a lot of what experts and fanatics that are bigger than me talk about with things like Disney World and Universal Studios is this idea of kinetic energy. Mm. That it's all of this visual investment to not, like you said, not to actively sell you something, but to passively touch on your emotions, your mood, and improve all of that. And then, you know, again, because we're capitalists, you might be motivated to purchase something or, you know, support whatever business you're in.
So I'm kind of intrigued. So I didn't know you were a big theme park person, but what's your, now there's different levels, right? There's the ones that have a certain, there's a certain romance to, you know, the small niche ones, mm-hmm. to what is now the manufactured perfection of, you know, the huge Disney parks or the new
Epic Universe.
Yeah, the new, yeah. Epic Universe, which are just these giant constructions of, you know, separation from reality. Mm-hmm. Where do you tend to go? I kind of figured you have, like, some romance for the small niche stuff.
It is definitely, you know, tug on your heartstrings. And when you walk through Seabreeze or even Darien to an extent, and I kind of find, you know, the positives in all of them. I mean, with Seabreeze, it started out as a trolley park, and it has, I just confirmed this the other day, it has the oldest active roller coaster in the country.
Yeah.
And I thought, because I do a lot of history about Rochester, but I also do a lot of history about Pittsburgh, PA. And down there, they have Kennywood, which is also very similar to Seabreeze. Started as a trolley park, has a beloved local amusement park. They also have a Jackrabbit, and it's the same manufacturer. It's virtually the same roller coaster.
Really?
And I didn't realize this, and a huge roller coaster geek confirmed it. I thought their Jackrabbit was older than ours by just a few months, but ours has been longer lasting because Kennywood closed in the 80s for a certain period of time. But no, the Jackrabbit at Seabreeze is older than Kennywood's, and we are the oldest continuously active roller coaster. But no, I appreciate how close and accessible Seabreeze is because it's literally in our backyards. But, you know, there is that something to say about that special occasion of going down to Florida or going out to California or, you know, going to the Midwest with Cedar Point or, you know, Busch Gardens in Williamsburg or any of them. They all kind of have their place for me. And, you know, that level of nostalgia and enjoyment, I don't really rank them.
Yeah.
Just because, like you said, like Disney and Universal are the pinnacle of the craft. And, you know, they're constantly, you know, we as visitors benefit from their competition with each other. So I don't know as if I would say, like, one's my favorite over another, but I definitely appreciate the roles and the niches that they fill.
They live in completely different worlds, right, to me. Like, when I see, like, you know, Carrie and I will enjoy going to play a mini golf, and we say, oh, what is labeled as the oldest continuously operating mini golf course in the country? Also, like, around the corner from Seabreeze, like, legitimately, like, a 4 minute, like, a 2 or 3 minute drive from there.
Yep.
Is that as well. Whether or not it's true is a whole nother thing.
Right.
But the fact that it's probably in the running or relatively close, it's just one of those things about Rochester that if you happen to have run across that fact, like, you just might not even see it. They have it on the sign, but you might not notice.
Right.
But there's a difference between you might occasionally notice and you've done, like, looking into the stuff, which kind of ties to a lot of everything else you do with the Lost Borough.
Right, exactly. And it's, you know, speaking of, it's funny. You have Seabreeze there. You have the putt-putt course there. You know,
Whispering Pines.
That's right, yeah. Whispering Pines. But then it's like you could be a complete smartass and be like, well, if you go, you know, 4 minutes due north, then you have a 20,000-year-old amusement park with Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... There's weird connections that you find, like, world facts to national facts, and you always seem to find something relating to Rochester. Mm. Speaking of Walt Disney, you can draw a very direct line between Walt Disney's idea for Epcot and the construction of Midtown Plaza.
Mm.
So much so, and I don't remember if I added this little fact in... Oh, I did. Yeah, I know I did. In the Unluckiest Corner. That Walt Disney came to Rochester to tour Midtown Plaza when it was constructed. It was the first urban mall in the U.S. Victor Gruen, who is the father of shopping centers or malls, designed it. And Walt Disney was so impressed that it helped him better concept his idea for the experimental prototype community of tomorrow when what would become Epcot.
Mm.
It's crazy. I just did an article in City Magazine when they did the Rochester 10. I did a Rochester 10 in retrospect and kind of talked about 10 historical figures that called Rochester home that aren't as well known as your Susan B. Anthony's, your George Eastman's, your Frederick Douglass's. And it's incredible the regional, national, and international effects, positive effects, that Rochesterians have had and don't always get talked about. And that's one of the reasons I exist. That's one of the reasons I called my company The Lost Borough, is not only is it a lesser-known nickname of Rochester, but it also speaks to sharing stories of our area that I'm not really discovering anything new. I'm just kind of helping to remind people that for all of the negatives that people like to throw about Rochester, fall of Kodak and the Fast Ferry and all of that fun stuff, there's a ton of positives, and there's a lot of reasons to have a little bit of pride in where you are, where you come from, and where you want to be. And that's kind of where I exist.
Yeah. And I kind of want to go to, so when you started this, you know, adventure of, you know, the Lost Borough, which at this point I would consider it, that's kind of what it is. Cause it's become many forms
of
things versus when I think we first met was, you know, it was, I think I remember the first releases of, like, this was a graphic design and, you know, t-shirt and merchandise kind of outfit. And I say that not in a detrimental way, but that's obviously how you started.
Yep. Yeah. And I started with 3 t-shirts, and my very first art show, it was very sparse. And that's how I got started, was doing art festivals and shows and being in front of people. You know, I had a website, but I still don't rely on the website to keep me going. It's always been set up a booth, have t-shirts and now posters.
There's something about that, by the way, too. And something about having somebody in front of you.
Yeah.
That is just a wildly different experience. And I tie it back to my wife, Carrie, because she sells at conventions mostly, and people buy in person.
Yep.
People will buy on the website. People want to buy in person. They want to see you. They want to see the person who comes up with these things. They want to understand. And sometimes they just want to see you and they want to talk.
Right. Exactly. And that's kind of where I evolved into other things. Like, I've done the t-shirts and now posters for 13 years. And about, you know, right around COVID, right around 2021, there was this free pitch that was sent out by a librarian on one of the social media forums saying basically, hey, for this summer, Monroe County Library System has a theme of adventure. And does anyone want to present anything adventure themed? And I thought, okay, that's a very interesting prompt. How can I connect that to Rochester history? And I put together this presentation about a 45 minutes going from the very beginnings of Rochester's development from when the glacier ice, you know, glaciers receded and revealed all of this all the way almost to present day with people coming to Rochester as their next big adventure.
I mean, you were able to stretch that into 45 minutes?
Yes. Yes. It was
the entirety of the formulation of our area.
I summarized a lot. I talked quickly and I summarized a lot. And just kind of did the quick hits. And that kind of evolved into a presentation series that I've been doing at libraries around the county. And I've been to almost all of them, talked about everything from, you know, Rochester's early adventurers to women's history, to black history, to urban legends, to transit. Coming up in the next few months, I'll be giving a talk on cemeteries in Rochester and how they evolved, and also city parks and how they evolved. So it's kind of that, like, they're all free to attend. It's all at, you know, various libraries, and they're on my website at thelostborough.com. And it takes away that obligation, or I don't want to say expectation, but it takes away that obligation. You don't have to buy anything to hear the story.
Yeah.
If you come to an art festival and you walk into a booth, sometimes you might start getting nervous that, oh, they're expecting me to buy something. I never expect you to buy something. I am just appreciative that you stuck around to hear me talk.
Yeah.
You know, you learned something. If you buy something, fantastic. Love it. That's the reality of why we're here. But also, I am just as focused on making Rochester a little bit more positive in people's eyes than the usual stereotypes and very quick to downgrade or quick to, you know, take pot shots at all the mistakes we've made.
Yeah. And also, it's funny that you mentioned the library, because we're, as a podcast network, we're doing our first Fringe event at the downtown branch of the public library.
Fantastic.
So we're in the, you know, one of the big rooms in there, and we're doing a, you know, a show where the hosts aren't going to have any idea what they're going to be kind of talking about until they sit down.
Yeah.
So we're going to have like three different groups, and we're just going to do an hour of like 15 minutes per group of hosts. And if it's something you're not super knowledgeable about, you can tag somebody else in. So it's, and I love that you talked about the libraries as being that hub, because it is their, you know, it's that hub of the community. And when you have the opportunity just to bring information to people, and it's, you know, I can only assume that you have a affinity for the libraries too, because there's, you know, so much information that you can get, information resources for free.
Oh, definitely.
That is wildly underused. I know I underuse it, because it is an astonishing resource of information and stuff, and it makes you want to, one, support them by doing events to bring stuff in, but when you need to research, well, you got the internet, but there's something about when you need specifics, it's hard to beat the library.
And I can't recommend them enough. Every chance I get, the second floor of the old building, the Rundell Library side, is the Local History and Genealogy Division. And they are more passionate about local history than anyone I've ever met, myself included. They are wildly passionate to help you if you have something Rochester or regionally related and need help. On top of general librarian, but everyone that works there is very passionate about what they do. And I have gone there numerous times. I mean, now I am very fortunate that I kind of have my own library of Rochester books. And we've had some very prolific writers in Rochester. But there have been more than a couple times where I have gone to them with a sentence that I have found of a story that I just can't find anything else on.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've gone and said, hey, I've heard this story about a mutated wolf in a Rondequoit. Do you have any information on this? And they come back, you know, a couple of days, a week later, and they've got a book excerpt and two newspaper articles on that very thing.
Wow.
And that led me to the urban legend of this wolf, if you've ever seen Game of Thrones or read Song of Ice and Fire, that literally was the size of a dire wolf and terrorized the frontier community of Irondequoit, and it led to the wolf being hunted by 100 people from the city of Rochester. This was 1830s, so Rochesterville. They found it, they hunted it, they taxidermied it, and they put it on display across the street from Reynolds Arcade for like 20 years.
Huh.
And it disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to it. And it was in the age right before photography was practical. Nobody did an etching of it. Nobody did an artwork of it. And all we have are those two newspaper articles and a book excerpt to prove its existence.
Yeah.
But then it's like, this is amazing. Now this is part of my urban legends presentation where we're not just talking about the White Lady of Durand Eastman.
Sure.
Now that I think about it, there's a lot of urban legends that come out of Irondequoit. But can't speak highly enough of our libraries and my experience with the local history division. And now that I've seen most of them with presentations, I do. Everyone in Monroe County, every branch, has been fantastic.
Yeah. And I love a story like that too, because the honest truth at this point, there is, yes, you have some more information than you did before. You cannot possibly know at this point whether or not it was actually a thing that happened or not. There was published information.
Right.
But, you know, I'd say at the time things were a little loosey-goosey with stuff like that, where you might not have necessarily verified anything or you might not have seen it. But the fact that you have published information and there is documented stuff,
right,
is like, one, what a great hook at the very least. And I love that you're referring to it as an urban legend, because you cannot know if it was real or not.
Right.
But still, there was a document, and that's what a hook to a story beyond anything else.
Right. And that's one. And, you know, you bring up a really good point about something being published. When I do all of my research, whether I'm designing a t-shirt, a poster, a presentation, a fringe festival experience, I try very hard to rely more on published work than just a blog post, which, again, not to diminish blog posts, but with anything that's published and printed, you have to expect a level of review and scrutiny that you don't always get with digital pieces. So that's one of the other like benefits that I found with libraries, is just all of your published pieces are much more accessible. But yeah, I try to scrutinize, and I try to be as thorough as possible. Just be like, okay, this is an amazing story. But to your point, do I classify this as this really happened and this is factual in history? Or do I classify it as, I really want this to have happened, yeah, and I hope it did, but it's an urban legend.
Well, I think that's also a great tone to start,
yeah,
having a presentation. Because if you're going in and say, well, that's obviously nonsense, and I'm going to tell you a cool story, yeah, it's not the same, yeah, right? And that might be the way I think, but that's not how you start a great story that keeps people engaged and interested in is, hey, here's this thing. You know, there's a fog in the past, yeah, until you find those lights of information or the lights of little drips of information. And how fun at the same time that, exactly, now you get to tell a story like that.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I do in my urban legends presentation that I give, is one of the legends, I take a real factual event and I wrote a story about it. I wrote the urban legend.
Yeah.
I tell the urban legend. And then I say, okay, this is how urban legends evolve. This is what actually happened. And kind of give the audience that comparison of like, this started from a factual documented event. It's not like it was a colloquial story that it then the sources came after the fact. So
yeah,
it kind of flips the idea of an urban legend. But like, you know, there's enough crazy stuff that have happened in our city, in our region, that, you know, as fun as urban legends are, you know, it's that trope of stranger than fiction, where like what I do with Sights and Sound District and what I did with The Unluckiest Corner is I want to show people that the areas you walk by, the areas you sit in, have this legacy and this heritage to them that is fascinating. And you don't know it. You're not expected to know it. This is just me saying, hey, you know, you might be familiar with Parcel 5, or you might be familiar with Austin Stewart Plaza or Charles Carroll Plaza. You may have sat there for lunch one day, but did you know that Palmer's Food Service started where you're sitting? Or do you know that the most successful Black entrepreneur in Rochester history started where you're sitting?
Yeah.
And here's their stories. Or, you know, we have our own version of Robert Ripley. He made his fame right where you're sitting. And it's like, that, those are all, you know, those are just three people I talk about at the Sights and Sound District series at Austin Stewart Plaza. But it's just part of a larger thing of like, here's some hidden history that I think is really cool and fascinating. And I hope you do too. And I'm going to deliver it to you as engaging and make you want to hear it as I possibly can.
Yeah. And just a reminder for everybody before we start to wrap up, you can get your tickets for these events on rochesterfringe.com. Friday, September 12th, Saturday, September 13th, Friday the 19th, Saturday the 20th, 5 o'clock. Get your tickets on rochesterfringe.com. Get them ahead of time. Make sure everybody's, make sure you're prepped ahead, because this is one you don't want to miss. What I wanted to kind of finish off with is, you mentioned that now you've been doing, you know, your design work for 13 years. And obviously that, you know, you learn a lot during that process about how do you create things? What do you want to do with it? How do you look back at the original work and say, this is what I was thinking I was going to do then, versus the ability you have to design now and where you want to take this in the future? Like, do you see your design sensibilities changing? Do you see your intent changing over those 13 years?
Definitely expanding.
Yeah.
When I started with the three t-shirts, it was the three designs that celebrated three city nicknames of Rochester. It was Flower City, the other Flower City, and then Young Lion of the West. And the idea was, here's two nicknames you know that have, you know, everyone knows, or I don't want to assume, but most everyone knows. And then here's a nickname you don't know. And hopefully that is, like you said, that's the hook to get people to ask questions, to learn, and then it just kind of expands from there. But I have been incredibly fortunate that my original mission of creating wearable artwork that has a story and celebrates different aspects of whatever the theme is, I've been able to hold on to that kind of overarching theme and just expand it. I've gone from city nicknames to urban legends to city neighborhoods to seasons. I want to eventually get into athletics, but you know, there's some, it's a fine line to walk with licensing and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But
because you and I have talked about that too, and our love of, you know, abandoned sports teams and the history, yep, of, you know, local sports. Like, you and I have had multiple conversations about this because I can't get enough of it. I just, yep, I love it. It's so much fun.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, your Royals idea is just, I don't want to spoil it, but yeah, it would be amazing if that happened. But it's, you know, now getting into like, you know, things that look better on paper than they do on a t-shirt. And that's led to a whole poster series where I started in Rochester and then did two versions where I did a neighborhood map and I did a history of growth map. All, you know, lesser known history. And that's expanded to other cities where I do posters. And that expands to presentations and walking tours and fringe events. So it's all just finding new ways to share the stories that I've been incredibly lucky to learn over the years and even more lucky to retain.
Yeah.
And, you know, figuring out how best to share those stories as many ways as possible. Is that, you know, a podcast like we're on now? Is that a YouTube channel? Is that a book that I've been frantically trying to write for the last couple of years? Mm. So there's a lot of opportunities. It's just a matter of where I need to focus my time because I am one person. But yeah, a lot of things to look forward to and options to pick from.
Well, I think that is a fine place to leave it as we can have, because this could go on for any amount of time. So, Matt, where can people again find all of your stuff if they want to buy some t-shirts, buy a poster, you know, learn about your other presentations, where can people find your stuff?
Sure. It's thelostborough.com. Everything's organized on there, from prints and artwork to apparel to events. I try to keep the events page as organized as possible. The Fringe Festival stuff is on there. And then my social media handle is the same. It's just The Lost Borough. I'm most active on Instagram and Facebook, and that's your best bet.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming over. And check out all of our other Fringe Preview podcasts if you haven't seen them already. You find them on a few of the shows on the Lunchador Podcast Network. Go to lunchador.org to learn about all of our shows. And we'll see you out on September 13th at 3 o'clock for the Lunchador Mystery Podcast Recording Special. See you there.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Paulie Guglielmo, and if you'd like to hear the behind-the-scenes stories of some of your favorite small businesses in Rochester, join me for one-on-one interviews with the entrepreneurs behind those businesses. It's the Paulie Guglielmo Show podcast, and it comes out every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. right here on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Hello, hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunchador Podcast Network, which is everywhere.